But anyway, let's bring in our TSN Hockey insider, Pierre LeBrun. Pierre, we just mentioned that the Blue Jackets have hired Brad Larsen as their head coach. He's been on the staff for a long time. Am I correct? Would you agree with my stance that Columbus is preparing for a bit of a dark storm in the next two or three years? Like, it might be a little bit ugly there, and they need someone to kind of get them through it? Or do they feel like they can get back on the horse and win again fairly quickly?
You know, I had Yermo Kekalainen on my podcast about a month ago, and certainly their hope was to get right back on it, but that was before they got the news from Seth Jones' camp that he was likely not going to sign an extension this summer. So I think that has changed a lot in my mind, right?
Yep.
So, listen, Kekalainen's going to have a news conference tomorrow and explain his thoughts on hiring Brad Larsen. I know that he's really liked in the organization, liked by the players. It's an interesting one. It's not like they just decided, let's just hire internally and not even talk to anyone. They talked to a lot of candidates. I mean, they actually had a lot of Zoom calls with different coaches, and Rick Tocchet, Jerry Gallant, both among those who had interviews with Columbus, but among others. But they went internal, and yeah, I think at the end of the day, if they end up having to trade Seth Jones, it's hard to see how they get the kind of pieces back where they can just go back to being a playoff team again. Although there are some teams in a position to perhaps offer those pieces more than others. Like, for example, there's so many teams that could use Seth Jones. The guy's an absolute stud. But not everyone can offer the same kind of pieces where perhaps players already in their early to mid-20s that can jump in and help Columbus. I think one of those teams is Philadelphia. Now, the Flyers had a really disappointing season. They got a whole batch of guys in their 20s on that team, and they got a big hole on their right side. Matt Niskanen surprised them by retiring after the bubble last year. Left a big void on that blue line. Plus, they had guys on that blue line that really struggled this year. I will tell you right now, I don't know if he's going to be a Flyer, because there's going to be about 24 teams inquiring on Seth Jones, but the Flyers are going to be in there. And they might have pieces that are more appealing to Columbus in terms of not just being draft picks and prospects, perhaps, and what other teams are going to be willing to throw on the table. So that's one thing to perhaps think about.
It makes sense to trade him this summer, though, doesn't it, Pierre? I mean, there's no sense of the team's going to be terrible next year. There's no sense of keeping him around on a bad team.
No, it's bang on, O'Dog. And the reason why you wouldn't do it, there are some circumstances where you say, you know what, let's show them that we've got a bounce back in our step, we've got a new coach, and we make the playoffs, and there's new sense of enthusiasm.
Not that team,
because they've done that. They've done the old let's gamble, and they did it with Panarin and Bobrovsky now. Of course, hindsight being everything, they missed Panarin terribly, but probably happy that whatever offer they made of Bobrovsky wasn't signed, because he looks like he's not on his game right now, and he's making $10 million a year in Florida. But my point is, they went down that road where they took a chance with a couple of big-time UFAs and said, you know, we're going to go for it. And by the way, they did beat the 62-win Lightning that year in the first round of the playoffs, but those guys still bolted. You know, Pierre-Luc Dubois asked for a trade. And somewhat under the radar, you know, Josh Anderson wasn't signing whatever was on the table last offseason either, and that kind of forced a trade to Montreal. So Seth Jones not signing right now with a year left on his deal, they have no choice in my mind. They have to move him this offseason at his maximum value. They can't let this drag to the trade deadline next year. It doesn't make any sense to me.
And it sounds like they're going to trade a goalie, too. I mean, you might have to. And I believe one of them is exempt, but they're, you know, both goaltenders kind of 27 years old and making $4 million a year. Like, I think I keep hearing there's a marketplace for them. But, you know, that's another scenario where you'll be able to get some decent pieces back for some of these players that you're trading out. Like, if I could think of three teams right now that would want Elvis Merlickens. Sorry, I butchered his name.
But package deal.
You know what I mean?
But like, and by the way, if Merlickens is the one traded, who's going to get the first tweet that Elvis left the building? All right.
Yeah, I've got a few ideas of who that would be.
Yeah, I know. Now you know better than me, Noodles, but both those guys have shown some pretty decent 1A promise, if not 1B at least. Like, they've got game, and they're not going to keep both. They both have a year left on their deal, and there's not enough net to keep both. Now, it's Merzlikins, by the way, who's exempt for the expansion draft.
Right, right.
So it would make sense to me, unless there's an overpay ahead of time, that you wait until July 21st to trade either Korpisalo or Merzlikins, right. Which is fascinating. Because those guys have a little more runway left in their careers than some of the other guys that are going to be available in the goalie market. The other goalie that just to switch off Columbus for a second, but since we're getting on the goalie market, Darcy Kemper just winning a gold medal for Canada at the World Championships. I'm intrigued by him and to see what his future holds. You know, you want to talk about teams that may have to go down a sort of rebuild. There's no question the Coyotes are. I mean, they need to get younger. Well, I mean, they did have a pretty veteran team the last few years. They made the playoffs last year, but they need to retool. That's why they hired Bill Armstrong. They didn't hire him to just try and keep patching it together. They need to do a real rebuild there, and I think that's his intention. And he's going to hire a young coach, or if not a young coach, a coach who's probably a first-time NHL head coach, I think.
I love that. But, a rebuild from what?
Well,
from rubble.
Kemper has a year left on his deal at $4.5 million. And yeah. I like Darcy Kemper. And, you know, it's funny. I've been thinking about the Leafs a lot with him. You know, like I wonder if Freddie Anderson walks. $4.5 million isn't a big tab for a guy who's pretty reliable, and he can match up with Jack Campbell, and you got your 1A, 1B.
Great.
Wouldn't shock me if the Leafs inquired there this offseason. Well,
the only problem I had heard, and that was last year's market, was Kemper, Merzlikins, or Korpisalo. All of those were starting with a first rounder. Leafs don't have any. They don't have any picks. They
future
don't have anything
ones,
to play
but
with.
Yeah, they've given up a lot recently.
Right.
Right. Right. Like that's the crazy part about that, because you mentioned it, like even if you connect Seth Jones to like Philadelphia needs a guy like Merzlikins or Kemper to come in there as well to help, you know, to play with Carter Hart and help him along the way. That would be a guy I would circle for Freddie Anderson, like a free agent
Noodles
signing.
In the future, just say Columbus goalie.
Yeah, I can't. It's
burned you. It just keeps coming up.
We've got to try. You know what? I try to respect
Merzlikins. Merzlikins.
Let's just say Elvis. As long as Elvis. You guys know Elvis, I apologize.
I was going to say, I think you could go first name basis with him. He's pretty much the only Elvis in the NHL right now.
But, yeah, exactly. Elvis.
Yeah, and the goalie carousel is going to be a story in itself. It often is, I guess, every year. But with the Seattle expansion draft, teams are going to make some interesting decisions with that. And, if I'm Ron Francis in Seattle, and I'm for sure he's thought of this, but you can get involved in it and be sort of a player for between other teams on this. You know, there could be some interesting decisions here. Where I might take this. One of my three goalies might be a guy who ends up on your team by the end of the summer. And what are you going to give me? I think those conversations are happening right now as well. As they should. And there's some interesting things. I actually have a story coming out tomorrow, guys, in The Athletic on Seattle. There's some wrinkles to the rules that a lot of people don't realize. And one really interesting one to me, and I wanted to drop this for you guys, is that if they sign, there's a free agent window July 18th to July 21st. And they can sign a player from another team during those 3 days, and they can sign them to the max 8-year deal, not just 7. There's a wrinkle in there that the NHLPA put in where they can go max 8 years with potential free agents in that window before the expansion draft. And I think that's pretty interesting in terms of some decisions by some big-time players. I don't know if Seattle's going to go down that road. Vegas didn't really go down the free agent road in 2017 around their expansion draft process, but that's not to say Seattle wouldn't.
Well, I think if we've learned anything from Vegas, is it probably will never happen again. Accumulating what they accumulated, what they got league-wide, it's crazy who they pulled in. Like Marchessault scores a couple of times. You know, Riley Smith is still there. You've got Shea Theodore as a throw-in, so you don't take a couple of other guys like Cam
Alex
Fowler.
Alex Tuck was a guy.
Yeah, he was. Right. And like that, they're going to get some good players that were not perceived as good players. But what Vegas also did was they loaded up on picks, and then they eventually traded them for Stone, for Pacioretty. They went up there and signed Petrangelo. You know, they got old pretty quickly. And I wonder if Seattle Like you mentioned the free agency stuff. Eichel is not a free agent. Seth Jones is not a free agent. I don't know if either guy would have any interest in going there. But if you can accumulate a ton of picks and a ton of youth, imagine starting your new franchise with Eichel and Jones if you could pull that off.
That'd be crazy.
Be crazy. Well, what an introduction to the league.
Yeah, and the interesting thing, Brian, is that at the outset, like people were hurting after the Vegas expansion draft. So many teams got played. And a lot of team executives are telling me, never again. We're not doing a side deal. We're not overthinking it. Seattle can take who they want. We're not making a trade with them. We're not doing this again. And I think that was genuine to some degree. And then we had a world pandemic, which resulted in a flat salary cap for a bunch of years now in the NHL. And now you got teams who have no choice. Like Tampa Bay right now has $85 million committed to 14 players for next year. The cap's 81.5. So I guarantee you that if it's not Seattle or another team, that Tampa is going to have to go to Seattle and say, Tyler Johnson's from your neck of the woods. He's a Washington boy. Do you need a first-round pick or a top prospect to take him because we're in a jam here? And there are many other teams who are going to have that conversation with them because of everything changed with the flat cap. Suddenly, Seattle went for, no one's going to give us a side deal because they learned from Vegas to bang, flat cap. It put Ron Francis right back in the driver's seat in this expansion draft process. So I agree. I talked to an AGM the other day. It was like he's trying to convince his GM, let them take who they want. We're not going to overthink it. Yes, it hurts to lose X player, but it's better than losing X player and another X player with a side deal, and they still take a guy. Let's just hang in there and take our medicine. I am hearing that, but I will tell you the flat cap is a problem for a lot of teams.
Pierre, you touched on the Leafs possibly being interested in Kemper. What other kind of things do you think they'll be dabbling in this offseason to kind of go back at this and just reshape the group that they have?
So, listen, they're still, I think, in this stage where they're decompressing and trying to figure out, how do we, half their roster is up, right? They got all these UFAs. Now, none of them are the pertinent guys. It's the support staff, right? And they're in this situation where they're looking at this almost if they keep signing guys to one-year deals, which, by the way, I have no problem with. I mean, that helps manage your cap. So what'll be interesting to me is, number one, Morgan Rielly. He's got a year left. I mean, we talk about Seth Jones all the time, but the Leafs have basically a very similar decision with Morgan Rielly. You have to go to J.P. Barry and to Morgan Rielly and have a very blunt discussion, I think, before you almost do anything else. And what's the number? We want you. You're a great leader. You've been a great Leaf, but what's the number? I don't know that they can get to the number that represents market for him. In fact, I'm pretty sure they can. So, I asked Kyle Dubas this question on his season-ending media availability last week. I said, well, you've shown that you're comfortable letting a key guy play out his deal. Zach Hyman, as an example, Freddie Anderson. Are you willing to do the same thing with Morgan Rielly? And I was actually surprised by his answer. I don't know if you guys were listening.
Yeah, I was.
But he said that. He said that was more of a pandemic thing and that it's actually probably not ideal that that happened. That was his answer. So I took from that that he is going to go there first, figure out the Rielly thing, and then go from there.
What does a pandemic have to do with a phone call?
Well, no, his was that there were a lot of guys around the league with the flat cap and the Wild. There are a lot of guys who didn't get signed. He's right. There are a lot of guys who didn't get signed. Landeskog, a lot of guys that you thought in a normal world would have had the extension 1 year out that didn't get done last year with all the uncertainty of the finances. There's no question that's true.
Well, before we get to all this, we still have the Stanley Cup playoffs. We're not even into the third round.
Right. And
we're chatting with Pierre LeBrun. The Habs are sitting pretty right now. I don't think they're going to love whoever they play against because they're going to be underdogs. Ooh. And they're either flying to Vegas or flying to Colorado, and that's not going to be easy. But I have to believe they're pushing for a Colorado win tonight. Push it to seven, sit back, get Petrie healthy, among others, and do you think there's one team in particular, if you caught a candid moment with the Habs, who they would pick? Would it be Vegas or Colorado that you think they could match up better against and they'd feel good about their chances?
And if the expression pick your poison ever held true, this would be it.
Right.
I mean, is there any chance the Stanley Cup final is being played right now between Colorado and Vegas? And that's no offense to the Habs, no offense to anyone else. I mean, Tampa's looking pretty darn good.
I'm not sleeping on Tampa.
No way.
Yeah, right, right. But that is two juggernauts taking swings right now out west. I will tell you this, Brian. I'm not sure I agree that the Habs hope that series goes to seven. I think you look at Winnipeg's nine-day rest between series, and I think actually the series ending tonight would be better timing for Montreal, by the way. They're always trying to find that sweet spot, and you know, how much is too much rest or enough rest, and I'm not sure that it going seven and the Habs being on the sidelines for 9-10 days, it would be great for them either. But I guess if I had to, it's really incredible to try and even think which team is a better matchup for Montreal, because those two teams are unbelievable. But the Habs just shut down an incredibly skilled Leafs team with high-end octane guys, and then they shut down a Jets team with high-end octane forwards. I would think that Colorado would at least be in some semblance a more similar matchup that way than a more heavy Vegas team that actually might look at Montreal's big four defense and say, you know, see, been there, done that. Don't worry about that. We got lots of big guys. So I think deep down, even though I think Nathan MacKinnon is a terror and would be so scary to defend, I think maybe Vegas is the matchup for Montreal if you're trying to figure out which upset is more likely.
Yeah, I agree with you, Pierre. The only thing that I kept thinking about is, and if it's literally a coin flip, you're having to go into a crazy Vegas building, or you're having to go to the top of a mountain in Colorado. Like, I kept thinking about, like, the altitude. I'm telling you, I hated playing in Colorado for the first 10 to 15 minutes of a game because your legs felt like they were tree trunks. You couldn't, and like, you know, I know guys are in great shape getting in there. That's the one thing. If there was one thing that separated it, if these teams were a coin flip, would be the buildings you play in. One feels like you're at the top of the mountain. The other one feels like you're at the Bellagio, and it's a rock star party.
One time we play in Colorado, and Pat Quinn tells the boys before we get off the bus, he's like, "Guys, I know tomorrow's a big game, but got some sponsors here from Coors Light. They want to meet us at the restaurant down the street. So we got to do what we got to do, and we got to go say hi." I did not have a good game the next game. Sponsors from Coors Light, we have to go say hi to.
The mountains were calling, and they were blue.
You see what I wish, O-Dog? I wish, O-Dog, that you would have told the media that in that moment, after the game, as opposed to wait 20 years later. But anyway, you know.
Yeah. What a mic drop that would have been. We got spanked tonight. I was awful because we were with the Coors Light reps last night.
Yeah. Sponsors.
What do you want us to do here? I will say, what a shock to the system it would be if you go to Vegas. You have been in Canada that has been shut down unlike anywhere else in the world in many ways, or close to it. And then you fly into Vegas, and Vegas is wide open, and it's Vegas. It's Vegas.
Oof.
Like, they're professional. You're in the third round. You're not going anywhere. But, man, it would be – imagine you looking outside your hotel room. You're like, I have to get out there. I have to party. I got to do it.
You know, and that's the thing that what I understand of the deal that basically the NHL has with the Canadian government on allowing the Habs to play at home in the third round is that it's a pretty tight protocol going forward again for the Habs when they're in either Vegas or Colorado. And by the way, and this is probably the most pertinent part, for Vegas or Colorado, when they come to Montreal, they have to kind of dial back to what it was before in the season. Because they've had loosened protocols here as the years gone on with their vaccinations and everything. They're going to have to dial back to Canadian-style protocols for the third round when they come to Montreal, which I'm sure isn't going to be too exciting for the players on those teams.
No kidding. Well, yeah, I mean, this is where it should be a balanced playground. Like, we've talked about it all year. Robin Lehner's, if it's Vegas, is going to be in the series. You know, I thought it was fair and I thought it was understandable that the players south of the border that had been vaccinated should be able to live a little bit more. I don't think that should be the case against Montreal. Like, if the Habs have to stay in their hotel room, Vegas shouldn't be able to go out for dinner with their wives. They shouldn't. They shouldn't. Now you're dealing with an imbalance. Like, this is it. You make it this far, the Cup's right around the corner, you got to beat a Canadian team for 10 days. Sorry, we're back to square one because they can't do it. Yeah, that'd be my stance. And I'll bet you they're going to be yelling and screaming about that in Montreal.
You, of all people, are going to tell a team to...
There's going to be an imbalance in the stands.
What's that?
There's going to be an imbalance in the stands as it is.
That already is.
For sure.
Yeah, you already got that going for you. But it's not going to happen, clearly. Anyway, we'll leave it there. Game 6 tonight. Enjoy it, buddy. We'll do it again down the road.
Right on, right on. All right, boys. Talk to you later.
There he is, Pierre LeBrun, our TSN Hockey Insider.